Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is B'choros Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur picks up in the middle of a discussion. The Gemara itself that we will be starting with, you will find 9 lines from the top of the page. A triangle appears at the beginning of the line. In order to introduce the Gemara, we can rely on the comment made on the outside margin under the heading Mivneh. In our Gemara marking system, the Shas Ozer, which is the Gemara that appears on your screen, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, features topic headings called Nosei and structural notes called Mivneh when needed. In this case, we are introducing the triangle, the series marking, amongst all the many different other geometric forms that are used for marking off a series. Here we have a series of questions, as we will now read the Mivneh note. Kushios al ha dinemar. These will represent questions or challenges to that which had been said way back on Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, in other words, in our last shiur. The Tumo shehoisa barov taro, a situation where a substance that was tome found itself in a majority, found it outnumbered, we'll say, by a majority of something tahor, afopi shalo mitama, even though while in that state where it was outnumbered, quantified by tahara, by something ritually pure, nevertheless, becholzois, keman di isedomi, that section of it, or the amount in the mixture that happens to be tome, is still considered present. So that since it's currently in a mixture where the majority happens to be tahor, the contact with that mixture of tuma and tahara will not be metame. However, we don't consider as if the tuma is void and non-existent. And we saw an illustration of this on Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Yirmiya told us about a case of fish brine mixed with water, and if the fish brine, which is something that's not mekabel tuma, is in the majority, and the water that's in there is in the minority, and the water happens to be tome, the fish brine will not. This mixture of fish brine and tome water will not pose a tuma threat. However, Rabbi Yirmiya said, if you take this and put it in a pot where food is cooking up and there's a liquid environment, the liquid, the water environment in the pot that's cooking will join up with the minority of tome water in the fish brine, making the water the majority. So that even though the water, when it was in the fish brine alone, before it entered the pot, was in the minority, nevertheless, it's still present, and as Rabbi Yirmiya said, it could join up with the water in the pot to create a water majority, and hence it would be metame. We now raise problems or challenges to Rabbi Yirmiya's contention. Esvei, we introduce a Tanaic source. You can see it appears in a frame. The topic of this source concerns the Pora Aduma, the ashes of the Pora Aduma. It might be noted that the ashes of the Pora Aduma, even though they are used in a ceremony or in a ritual that creates purification tara, the ashes themselves are a source of tuma, that one who touches or carries the ashes, in fact, becomes tome. So we have the following source, Efer Kosher. That means the proper ash of a Pora Aduma, Shinis Arev Be'efer Makle, that got mixed up with common ash, regular ash makle from something that was burnt other than the Pora Aduma, the red cow. Hochin achar haroiv, we base our ruling concerning a mixture of this nature based on that which is in the majority. Litame. Ve'i rubo efer makle lo mitame. If the majority of the mixture happens to be common ash, so one who touches it will not become tome. Now the Gemara says, "V'i amris tuma keman di isei domi." If one agrees with Rav Yirmiyah's approach that the tuma, though it's not mitame, but it's as if it is still there, even though it's in the minority, nehi debemaga lo mitame. Granted, it's not going to, this ash, common ash, poraduma ash mixture will not mitama upon contact, litame b'maso. It should, however, communicate tuma through carrying or supporting it, because this person is in fact supporting something that is tome, namely the efer poraduma. The Gemara answers, in fact, this point is correct. Ha itmar ala om Rav Yossi Rav Chanina tohor milatame b'mago. Rav Yossi explains that what the source says, that when the majority is Efer Maklit, said it's not mitame, it meant it's not mitame, it doesn't communicate tuma upon contact, because we assume that what you are touching is part of the majority, and that's common ash, which is not mitame. Avol mitame b'maso, however, it will communicate tumas maso. That means if someone is supporting, is holding this mixture of Efer Makle with Efer Poraduma, he is holding Efer Poraduma, and hence he does absorb Tuma through Maso. Maso means carrying or supporting it. So far, we have defended then Rav Yirmiyah in showing and demonstrating that the Tuma, even though it's outnumbered by Tara, it nevertheless is considered still there, and it will manifest itself by someone who is carrying or supporting this particular ash mixture. The Gemara asks, V'amar Rav Chisda, Nevela Betela Beshuta. If you have a mixture of meat, a Nevela, and we should just point out that nevela is meat that was not slaughtered, but rather meat from a dead animal, an animal that just died or was improperly slaughtered. The nevela is a source of tuma through maga or maso. It can, if one touches a piece of nevela, he'll become tome through either touching it or carrying it, supporting it, even if he's not in direct contact with the meat itself. Nevertheless, Rav Chisda says that if you have a mixture of nevela with shchuta, the majority being shchuta meat is something that's not meat that has been properly slaughtered, is not doesn't communicate any tuma whatsoever. So you have a minority of nevela that's found in a majority of shchuta. Again, it's meat mixed with meat. However, this is called min b'she'eino minu. Even though they're both meats, they're different types. In halachically speaking, different types. One is nevela and one is shchuta. Why is this classified as an min b'sheino mino mixture? And we should point out before we go further that when you have a mixture of unlike substances, then we say that there will be bittel barov, that if we go according to the majority. This is in contrast with mixtures that are called min b'mino, when mixtures are of like substances, two like substances, one being allowed and one being forbidden. In such a case, there won't be bittel. Of course, what we're saying is a very, we'll say it, a superficial approach to the matter, but we are trying to convey relevant information that's relevant or necessary for our sugya. So Rav Chisda says that if you have that nevela meat that fell into a majority of shchuta meat, we say the nevela is botel. And why is it described as unlikes? She'efshar l'shchuta she'te'ose nevela. It's impossible for shchuta meat to become like nevela meat. In other words, shchuta meat cannot become tome, cannot be a source of tuma. So since the majority cannot become like the minority, they're considered two different substances. Now, what is Rav Chisda telling us? He seems to be saying that the nevela is simply botel. It loses its identity. It becomes non-existent. And as a result of that, there is no tuma. So, that having been said, the Gemara goes on, nehi de b'mago lo metama. Granted, if you touch this mixture of meat, we will say that you're not tameh because we go according to the majority, and the majority happens to be shchuta. Nevertheless, letameh b'maso, if Rav Yirmiyahu is correct that the tumah is still said to be present, then if you, let us say, hold or support this mixture of meat, you should absorb tumas maso, because after all, you are supporting nevela meat, and according to Rav Yirmiyahu, it does not lose its identity. Omar Lay. So it is said in response to this question, it could very well be that Rav Yirmiyahu, who is being challenged, he is the speaker, and he says, Atun b'derav chisda masnisu law, you have this particular case taught in the name of Rav Chisda, Anan b'derav chia masnina law. We have it taught in the name of Rav Chia, and it appears as follows. Tani Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia presents what Rav Chisda said as an Amoraic statement. Rav Chia has this same thing presented in a Tanaic source. Nevela ushchuta betelois zu bezu. That a mixture of nevela and shchuta, if you have the majority, let us say, of shchuta, so the nevela will be botel. The itmar Allah, and it was said concerning this Tanaic source, Omar Rav Yosi Bar Chanina, tohor milatame b'mago, avo metame b'maso. It is, when we say it's botel, and it becomes void, if you have, let's say, the majority of shchuta there, the nevela is void, or it becomes botel only insofar as tumas mago. Because if you touch it, we say that you're probably touching the majority, and the majority is shchuta. However, there is tumas maso, exactly like Rav Yirmiyahu would have you believe. So that in this presentation of the case of nevela betela b'shchuta, we are preserving the concept that Rav Yirmiyahu introduced, that even though as far as contact is concerned, we say you go according to the majority, but nevertheless we do not deny the presence of the minority tuma source, the nevela. And hence, when you are carrying it or supporting it, you are supporting the nevela that's in the mixture, and hence you do absorb tumas nevela. Question, Vaha Tanan, do we not have the following source, Reb Lezer ben Yankov Omer? And by the way, this is our Mishnah is now being quoted, and as we had said in our previous shiur, the reason for this whole sugya appearing is probably because of this point in the discussion, that we're now citing our Mishnah, hence it ties in to this section of the Maseches. So Reb Lezer ben Yankov says, Behemo gasa sheshofa haroras dam, a cow that shed or that cast forth or excreted a block of blood. Hare zu tikover v'niftarom in abechora. You shall bury this block of blood, and any future births, the next birth that this cow produces, will be exempt from bechora. In other words, we're viewing the haroras dam as if it were the bechora. It's basically a dissolved firstborn animal. V'toni Rabbi Chia eino mitama lo b'mago v'lo b'maso. And here we have Rabbi Chia's Tanaic commentary that applies to this case of the Mishnah that says that there won't be tumas mago and not even tumas maso. Well, amai, if Rabbi Yirmiyahu is correct, why do you say there's no tuma? Nihi de b'mago lo mitama. Granted that through mago there is not going to be any tuma, because if you touch it, we will say that you're touching the blood section of this. However, tatame b'maso, there should nevertheless be tumas maso. We should just point out, by way of review, and it's a point that Rashi makes, that it says in this source, before we come to the question, in the source itself it said there's no tuma lo b'mago v'lo b'maso, and Rashi points out that, well, the reason for that was that the whatever dissolved fetus might be in this block of blood, the Gemara had pointed out that the majority is blood. Blood is not a not a source of tuma. It's the fetus that's mixed in here. But the basis of saying there's no tuma is because the majority happens to be blood. But nevertheless, granted that the majority is blood, that will explain why there's no tumas mago, because when one touches this block of blood, we say he's touching the blood section. However, if one were to support it, one were to carry it, he should be tomei tumas maso. And yet it says here emphatically, there's no tumas maso, and this is therefore a question on Rav Yirmiyah. Ishtik, well, he remained silent. Omale, so the questioner says, Dilma shiny hocha dehavula tumasrucha. Maybe this case is different, because you're dealing here with something that was tame, but it became srucha. Srucha would mean rancid, disgusting, abominable, and hence it loses all association with tuma. It's considered, we'll say, something like this mere garbage, debris, or something of having no significance whatsoever, and hence it loses its tuma. So the suggestion right now to explain this source and preserve Rav Yirmiyah at the same time is by saying that this is tuma srucha. It's something that's abominable. No one would eat it, for example. Omale, so and now we challenge this particular this particular answer with a question, and we have a long question marking, and you'll notice the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text to help us follow the structure and development of the Gemara. This will take us to the top line on Amid Beis. So the Gemara says, well, you can give this answer that it lost its tuma characteristic because ha'nicha le'bar pada. This analysis will be in tune with Bar Pada's approach, the Omar, who says that tuma chamura ad leger, the tuma kala ad lekelef. Ha'avadai lo chazia leger. Tuma chamura is a situation of tuma that would metama, that would communicate tuma to a person or vessels. Tuma kala is a tuma that's associated with food. According to Bar Pada, tuma chamura poses a threat ad leger, which means as long as a Gentile would eat the meat. In this case, we're talking about nevela or nevela related substances. Nevela is something that is capable of being metama person. It's a source of tuma chamura. So Bar Pada says it will be able to communicate tuma chamura as long as a Gentile would eat it. However, if it reaches a point at which a person, a human being, wouldn't eat it because it's so disgusting or rancid or sour or whatever, if it reaches that low point, so to speak, it no longer will be metame. So according to Bar Pada, we can give this answer of tuma srucha because this block of blood is something that a person would not eat. Tuma kala ad lekelev isn't really germane to our discussion right now, but it happens to mean that something will lose its ability to metama other food items if it reaches a point of disgustingness or inedibility, if you will, with regard to a dog, that even a dog would not eat it. So as far as this case is concerned, the Gemara says at the bottom line, ha vadai lo chazi leger. This block of blood with the dissolved fetus in it, a ger wouldn't eat it. And as a result of that, we can call it tuma srucha, and that will explain why it's not metama even b'masa. And with that, preserve Rabbi Yirmiyah. Ela l'Rabbi Yochanan di Omar. However, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with Bar Pada, who says achazu v'achazu ad lekelev, not only tuma kala but even tuma chamura does pose a threat down till a point that a dog up or down till a point that even a dog would not eat from it. In other words, as long as a dog would eat it, it is capable of being metame tuma chamura. It could be metame person. Well, ho chazia lekelev, a dog would eat this block of blood that was excreted by the animal. And since a dog would eat it, so it still is capable, the tuma is still present. The dissolved fetus in the block of blood being a source of tuma is still present. and yet the source says it's not metame b'masa. So that is a problem for Rav Yirmiya, because Rav Yirmiya said as long as the tumah is present, it still maintains its identity. And if that would be the case, there would be the fetus identity in this block of blood, and the fetus is, being that it's obviously it's dissolved and quite dead, it's a source of tumas masa, and yet the source says that there is no tumas masa. The only way to explain that is because it's botel berov dam, and not only botel, but it loses its identity altogether. It's considered void altogether. Kasha, the Gemara ends off with this as a problem for Rav Yirmiya. So just to review, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that has as a standard Tuma Chamura Ad Lekelev, the source that we saw that said that this, that the block of blood is not Metama even B'masa, and we explained it, that's because the majority is blood and blood is not Metama. We see that the majority not only is a majority in quantity, but it also voids or obliterates the presence of the Tuma altogether. And that is a problem for Rav Yirmiya. At this point, the Gemara leaves Rav Yirmiya aside with this kashya, and we now focus on the Machlokas Bar Pada and Rav Yochanan. On the side of our Gemara, under the Nosei heading, you'll notice we have written Machlokas Bar Pada Rav Yochanan Ad Heichon Tuma Kala V'Tuma Chamura. As we mentioned before, till what extent? I'd like to use the expression down to what extent, meaning we're starting with something that is an edible food substance, and it becomes less and less and less in quality. So down to what level of quality will it still pose a tuma problem? So that is the issue, and Bar Pada says that tuma kala is ad lekelev, that something will be capable of transmitting tumas oichlin down to the point that a dog would no longer dog would no longer eat it. In other words, as long as a dog would eat it, it is capable of transmitting tuma to other food. Chamura ad leger. Bar Pada, as we saw, holds that tuma chamura, that something will be capable of communicating tuma to a person, as only as long as a person would eat the item, the nevela, the meat. However, if a ger, a person, a Gentile, would no longer eat it, then we say that it loses its significance as far as tuma chamura is concerned, and it wouldn't affect a person or vessels. Rabbi Yochanan is machmir. He says that the tuma threat continues even in the realm of tuma chamura. He says, achazu v'achazu ad lekelev, as long as a dog would eat, even though a person would not eat the substance, the nevela, for example, would still be a threat and could communicate tuma to a person, even though a person wouldn't eat that kind of meat, whatever state it's in. As long as a dog would eat it, it still poses a tuma chamura threat. That's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. We will then, as the Gemara unfolds, be looking into the reason or sources for these opinions. The Gemara on the second line, Gufa. Bar Pada Omar Tuma Chamura Ad Leger. The Tuma Kala Ad Lekelev. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Achas Zu V'Achas Zu Ad Lekelev. And the point behind Rabbi Yochanan is not only Tuma Kala, like Bar Pada said, but even Tuma Chamura will continue to be a possibility or a threat as long as a dog would eat it. My Taimo de Bar Pada. What is the reason or the source for Bar Pada? Bar Pada, who made the distinction between Tuma Chamura and Tuma Kala. The pasuk says, "Lo sochlu kol nevela lager." The pasuk itself continues, and you can see on the side of the Gemara we've written in this pasuk, Dvarim Perek Yudal, the pasuk of Aleph, where the pasuk reads, "Lo sochlu kol nevela lager shir bishrecha titnena viachala o machor lenochri." The pasuk says that a Jew is forbidden from eating nevela, but one can give it to a Gentile who lives in our midst, or sell it to a to a Nohri. We learn from this Pasuk, Horu'uya Lager Kruya Nevela. That which is fit for a Gentile is called Nevela and has the properties of Nevela, including the ability to be Metame. V'she'eno Ru'uya Lager, if a Ger would not eat it, Eino Kruya Nevela, it's no longer considered or categorized as Nevela. And hence, Barpada sees in this that as long as once the Nevela reaches a point that a Gentile would not eat it, even though a dog may, yes, eat it, nevertheless, it won't communicate Tuma Hamura. It won't be classified as Nevela. V'idach, Rabbi Yochanan, what does he do with this? Lim'uti hecha dehisricha meikara. He says that, well, from this pasuk, we will exclude from Tuma that which at its outset was already something disgusting, something that was masriach. And the chiddush of this point is that even though a dog might eat it, which according to Rabbi Yochanan himself doesn't stop it from being a source of tumah, nevertheless, that rule that as long as a dog would eat it, it poses a tumah threat, that is only because it had once been at a point that a person would have eaten it, and in the course of time it became rancid and disgusting. However, something that was never at a point that a person would have eaten it, even though a dog might eat it, this is nevertheless called saruach or hisriach meikara. Let us look at Rashi for a little bit more on this point. Fourth line from the top, hisriach meikara, kagoin, an example of something that was always disgusting, shinishtabru evorehel mechayim v'hislia, an animal that had broken limbs while it was still alive, and in that state with the broken limbs, it became, v'hislia means it became wormy. Hahi, so that example, afalgav dechazi lekelev, even though a dog would eat a wormy limb that's on an animal, loy mitama v'masa, Rabbi Yochanan will concede that there will be no tumas masa from this, dehome oilam lo yorda le tumas masa. It didn't ever descend, it was never in a tumas masa category. If, however, it was something that at one point was fit for a Gentile, and as a result of that had been categorized as capable of communicating tumas maso, that category or that classification will not depart it ad shetifsa mikelev, until it reaches a point that even a dog would not eat it. So Rabbi Yochanan is explaining to us that the pasuk of lo sochlu kol nevela lager v'chulei excludes from the realm of tumah something that was hisriach meikara, something that at no point would have been eaten by a Gentile. However, something that at some point would have been eaten by a Gentile, meaning because it was pretty good, but then decayed and became rancid. So Rabbi Yochanan says that kind of thing will continue to be a source of tumah hamura until it reaches a point that even a dog would not eat it. Now the Gemara goes back to the other opinion, v'idoch, that namely Bar Pada, who said that the source of that the pasuk was the source for his opinion. What does he say about the point Rabbi Yochanan just made? He says hisricha meikara lo tzricha kro limuti. I don't need a special pasuk, a special verse to exclude from the realm of tuma the case of hisriach meikara, because that is afro be'almahu. Hisriach meikara is no more significant than mere dirt. And as such, it is obvious to Bar Pada, even without a pasuk, that something like that would not be a threat, a source of tuma. Tanan. We quote here a Tanaic source. You can see it appears in a frame. It's, in fact, that which we learned in the Mishnah, together with the comment that we saw earlier made by Reb Chiya. So we have learned the following. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Behemo Gasa Sheshofa Haroras Dam, a Behemo, a cow, for example, that has not given birth till now, and it's and it emits a block of blood, harezu tikover, you shall bury this block of blood because of the consideration that there may be a dissolved firstborn in there, and a firstborn has the a bechor status, which is has a holy status, and as a result of that, it is usur to benefit from it. V'nifteres min habechora, and any subsequent birth of a real offspring will not be obligated to be treated as a bechor, be simple common chulin. V'tani Reb Chiya, and Reb Chiya comments on this: eino matama lo b'mago v'lo b'masa. This block of blood will not communicate tuma, not through touching nor through supporting or carrying it. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Bitul Baroiv Nagubal, and Rabbi Yochanan comments in explaining how is it that Rabbi Yochanan says that even though there is a dissolved Bechor in here, which is a source of Tumah, why is it that there is no Tumah communication? So Rabbi Yochanan explains, because the majority of this block of blood happens to be blood, and the fetus is then said to be botel, is said to be neutralized or outnumbered, and as a result of that, there is no communication of Tumah. The Gemara asks, "My iryo mishum bitul barov, why do you need to speak or prove your point based on bitul barov?" In other words, in order to make the point that it's not a source of Tumah, we said, well, it's because the majority of it is blood, and blood is not metame. Why use that approach? Tepukli delo ischazi leger klal. Coming on the heels of our discussion just before, why not say that it's not metame because a Gentile would not eat this? And we saw before, certainly in the name of Bar Pada, that this is something that once you establish that a ger would not eat it, it wouldn't be a source of tumah at all. So just say that a block of blood is something that a Gentile would not eat. That should be good enough reason for it being tohor. The Gemara responds, Ha nami ischazi meikara lager agav ime. This block of blood, before it came out of the mother, it was part of this mother animal, and the mother animal, with all its parts, all its entrails, and whatever's in it, is something that a person would eat. A goy would eat it, and so that even though he might not eat a separate block of blood that emerged, but nevertheless, when it was inside the mother, it was part of the cow entity, and as such, it's something that is considered roi lager, because when it's inside the cow, it's simply viewed as part of a cow, and a cow is something that a ger would eat. Tnan Hosom. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yankiv Omer, Tsir Tohor, Shinofa Lusoichoi Mayim Kolshehu, Tomei. Tsir is fish brine, and fish brine itself is something that is not metame. It's considered just a mere exusion from fish, and hence it's not classified as a standard food item, and hence it's not subject to tumas ochlin. And this source says that fish brine, which we should point out is something that's a processed food, if you will, and we'll see what we're referring to in a moment or two. So fish brine, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, if a little bit of water falls into it, it will then be metame. And as a result of that, Rabbeinu Gershom says, it will need to be subjected to hashoka, which is an immersion in a mikveh, in order to reinstate a tahara status to it. What we're saying in the meantime appears to be a bit vague. In other words, what's this point of a little bit of water making a difference? Let us go on in the Gemara and it will become clear. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Bar Avua, Zois Oimeres, from this Tanaic source we learn Nechshedu Ame Horetz La'arev Mechtsa Mayim Betzir. Ame Horetz, these are people that are not knowledgeable in halacha. When they prepare fish brine, they are suspect of mixing in 50% water. So the fish brine referred to in the source is really made 50% fish brine and 50% water. Now, Ame Horetz are people that are not careful in the realm of ritual purity and tumas and taras, and therefore the water that came into contact with the Ame Horetz when he was preparing the fish brine, the water that's there is tomei. What the source describes is that if a little bit more water falls in, then the majority is water. And as such, the majority is water that happens to be tomei. And at that point, it is then, as the source says, tomei. The fish brine itself, the liquid that is exudes from the fish body, that happens to be, in this case, after the kolshu, the minor, the minuscular amount of water falls in, it then makes it such that the fish brine content is the minority of the substance. And all this, once again, just to review, comes as a result of the fact that in the initial preparation of the fish brine, 50% was already water. Water that's tomei, because we're dealing with an Ame Horetz. The Gemara asks a very, let's say, detail-type question. V'loma li mechza. Why, in order to set up this this case where the kolshehu of water, kolshehu means any amount, any small amount, in order to set up the case of the kolshehu being responsible for the tuma, why do you have to have, why does Rav Nachman have to set it up as a case of 50% water, afilu botsir mimechza nami? Even if the original fish brine would have been not just 50%, but a little more, by virtue of the fact that the water was botsir mimech, so a little less than half, let's just say 49% water and 51% fish brine. However, with the kol shehu of water added, it now becomes 50-50. Fahani mashehu, this kolshu of water, this little amount of water that now falls in, havi le palga, will change the statistics and make it 50% water, 50% fish brine, upalga bepalga lo batil. And we know that that there is no voiding when you have 50-50. We always speak about a minority being botel in a majority, botel meaning voided or outnumbered, but not when it's 50-50. So couldn't he have explained the source by saying that, well, that Amaratzim are suspect of mixing in almost 50% water, without saying an actual 50% water. And still we would have been able to come to the conclusion that with the falling in of the Mayim Kolshu, the fish brine will metame. Amo. So in light of this particular question, we say that Rav Nachman really said that an Ame Horetz is nechshad of mixing ad lemechza, almost 50% water. Okay, so with that having been said, once, if you say it, if you present it like that, almost 50% water is added to the fish brine, and now a kol shehu of more water falls in, it now is tomei. Why? Because it's 50% water, 50% fish brine, and 50% of water will not be void in a mixture with a mere 50% of fish brine. E boyes emo. Another approach is le'olam mechza. We say that, in fact, the Ame Horetz, like Rav Nachman said originally, he mixes in a complete 50% of water. And, well, you'll say then, even at that point, already, even without the kol shehu, it will be tamei. So now we explain Tumas Ame Horetz Derabanan. Tumas Mashkin, the Rabbanan. These concepts that an Am Oretz is assumed to be Tomei, that itself is a rabbinic idea. And that Mashkin, that liquids, communicate Tuma, is also a rabbinic idea. So we're dealing on a non-Torah plane. Since we're saying that this is a rabbinic area of halacha, Beruba Gozu Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said that the liquid will be metame only if the majority happens to be tame. Bepalga upalga lo gozu barabon. The Rabbanan did not institute their stringency of tumas mashkin when only 50% happens to be tame. And in such a case, 50-50 would be batel. So in order to describe the fish brine as being capable of being matama, you'll have to put the water over the 50% mark, and that's what it was. That's what was featured in the source above, that a kol shehu of water fell in to the fish brine that had a full 50% of water, and only with the addition of the kol shehu will it be matama. Otherwise, it would have been a 50-50 situation, and since it's a rabbinic ruling, a 50% tumas mashkin temeim would not have been a threat, and it would have been batel. We now turn to the Mishnah, the new Mishnah. On the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading under the Nosei, where we have written Behema Shemenika, an animal that you see nursing its a young one. Ein Hoshishin Shemo Vlad Shel Acheres Hu. One does not have to suspect that the creature that's nursing from it is the offspring of some other animal. This idea, of course, has great ramifications for a case of an animal that we do not know to have borne any offspring before, and we see it nursing an animal. So the animal that is nursing, if it's a male, then we would say it is a bechor. Now the Mishnah. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Halokeach behema menika min ha'oved kichavim. If a person buys a cow that is nursing a young one, and he buys this cow from a Gentile, ein choshishin shema b'no shel acheres hoyo. One does not suspect that the animal suckling from this cow that I just bought happens to be the offspring of another animal. Because if I were to suspect that, then I would have to say that the animal that follows in birth from the cow I just bought is possibly a firstborn. But accepting Rav Shmuel Gamliel's point here, I don't have to suspect that, because an animal that is nursing its own offspring, its own young one. Nichlas l'soch edro, a person enters his flock, v'ro es ha-mavkirois menikois, v'she'enon mavkiros menikois, and he notices animals that just bore their first child, those are the mavkiros, that they are nursing. They are nursing young ones, and he sees the older animals, and Enon Mavkiros are animals that already have given birth in the past. Ein Choshishin Shema Beno Shel Zu Bo Loi Eitzel Zu V'Shema Beno Shel Zu Bo Loi Eitzel Zu. One does not have to suspect, or one is not to suspect, that there has been a switch around of animals. In other words, in this case, imagine the Mavkiros happen to be nursing female animals. In other words, female, as you know, female animal is not subject to Bechora. So the Mavkiros in this, for our illustration, would be, let us say, nursing the Mavkiros are nursing the females, female calves, and the Enon Mavkiros, those are animals that have borne other animals in the past, are nursing male calves. In that scenario, and according to this rule of the Mishnah of Ein Choshishin Shema Beno Shel Zu Bo Lo Eitzel Zu, in this scenario, there would be no animals presented to a kohen. There are no bechors over here. Because the Mavkiros, according to our example, who are nursing females, the females are their own animals, and this is their firstborn animal. And as you know, a female is not subject to Bechora. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nosei, and we've written Divrei Rav. Rav has a point that he makes. He says, Halacha kfi kol mishnah beperek zeh. The practical application of halacha will follow every mishnah in this perek, chutz mimokum sheyesh machlokas, except for mishnayos in which there appear machlokasim. As we look beyond in the Gemara, we'll notice a series of triangles, and under our Mivneh heading, we present the triangle, and we point out, Sidra shel kushyos shel Rav Sheshes. There will be a series of questions of Rav Sheshes. Le'eza tzorech hoya le'rav lomar es devorav. What was the point in Rav saying what he does, what he did? Now, the Gemara. Omar Rav. Hilchasa bekulei pirkin bar miplukta. The halacha, the practical halacha, will follow every mishnah that appears in this perek, except for those mishnayos in which you find a machlokas. Omar Rav Sheshes, Amina, I figured, kinayim v'shochiv Rav Omar loho shmaitza, that Rav said what he did as he was dozing off. In other words, it's something that he didn't say with careful thought. Ahei. And Rav Sheshes continues his question. We can actually refer to this, as our markings indicate, as a long question. We have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line indicating that all of this section of Gemara constitutes Rav Sheshes' problem with Rav. He says, what could Rav possibly be referring to? Ahei, on what? On which? Regarding which Mishnah is he saying his point? E lemo aresha. If one were to think that he's referring to the Mishnah on Daf Yud Tes Omid Beis, Miflig Pligi Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva. That's a Mishnah that has a machlokas in it. And Rav already said that a Mishnah in which the subject is a subject of controversy, we're not going to follow that. In other words, Rav's comment that the halacha follows the mishnayos of this parak isn't referring to that. Elo, Adi Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Maybe Rav is referring to Rav's comment that the halacha follows the mishnayos in this parak is a comment referring to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who spoke about the need to bury the Haroras Dam on the Chof Aleph Omid Beis. So Rav Sheshes explains, I wouldn't need Rav to address his remark regarding that Mishnah. We know anyway that Mishnas Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Kav Vinoki. There's a known acceptance that the teachings of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov are Kav. Kav means, it's literally a quantity, it means few in number. He doesn't appear often in the Mishnayos, relatively speaking. Vinoki means, and when he does appear, the halacha will follow him. So, without Rav telling us his rule in an explicit fashion over here, I would know anyway that the halacha will follow that which Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov teaches. So, of what need was there for Rav to make this comment, that the halacha is like the Mishnayos in this perek? Elo, Adarabon, Shimon ben Gamliel. Maybe Rav's comment is addressed or referring to our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we saw Rav Shimon ben Gamliel speak about the purchase of a nursing animal from a goy, and we say that the fact that it's nursing is a sign that that is its own offspring, and that future offspring are not going to be suspect as Bechor. So maybe what Rav is saying is that we shall follow Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara says, well, that's not it can't be, because Miflig Pligi Bebraisa. On Daf Chof Dalid Amen Aleph, there will be a Braisa in which you see that this point is actually the subject of controversy. Elo, so maybe Adar Rabbi Yosi ben Hamshulam. Maybe Rav's comment is regarding that which appears on Daf Chof Dalid Amud Beis, where you have Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam appearing in a Mishnah. The actual content is of no relevance for our current discussion, but maybe Rav's comment is that we shall follow the ruling of, or the teaching of Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam as it appears on Daf Chof Dalid Amud Beis. So to that, Rav Sheshe says that can't be either. Ha Omar Rav Chado Zimno. Rav already said that we shall paskin like Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam. Yomar Rav Hilchasa ke Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam. So if he already said we shall follow Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam, his comment over here that the halacha follows the Mishnayos in this perek is obviously not referring to Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam. Elo, rather, you might say aseor baalmum. Maybe Rav's point is with regard to the Mishnah on Daf Chof Hei Omed Aleph, where the Mishnah discusses the hair from a Bechor Baal Mum, a blemished firstborn. So the Gemara says, no, Miflag Pligi Akavio Ben Mahalel V'Rabbonon. In that very Mishnah, there is a controversy. There's a machlokas between Akavio Mahalel and the Rabbonon. And Rav himself said that the halacha will follow those Mishnayos in which there is no machlokas. So up till this point, we see Rav Sheshes expressing his wonderment concerning the need for Rav to make this comment, the comment that he made at the opening of our Gemara. The Gemara responds, Le'oilom Adarabon Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav's comment is in fact a reference to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, namely our Mishnah. What we said before, but our Mishnah is part of a controversy. We see a controversy in a Braisa on this matter on Daf Chof Dalet. V'ho komash malon. And the point that Rav is making is de plukte de Braisa lo plukto hi. The fact that there is a dissenting or a differing opinion that appears in a Braisa, that is not considered a real point of opposition or a real point of contention. In other words, we can say that a Braisa put up against a Mishnah is of no real significance. And therefore, when Rav mentioned that the Halacha is like the Mishnayos in this parak, his point was that any Mishnah in which you do not find a machlokas in the Mishnah, that is something to rely on. That's the Mishnah in this parak that's of that nature is something to rely on. You'll say, well, there happens to be a dissenting opinion found in a Braisa. So the point of Rav's comment is that is of no significance. The fact that the dissenting opinion is found in a Braisa. The Gemara goes on, V'kevon de'omar Rav hilchosa b'kulei pirkin bar miplukta. Once we have this comment of Rav, the comment with which our Gemara opened up, so halacha, we're at the top line of Chof Dalet Amud Aleph, halacha k'Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam lamali. Then why was it necessary to have a separate comment of Rav saying that we shall follow the ruling of Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam? After all, Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam appears in the Mishnah Daf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, which is part of this perek. So wouldn't that have been included in this comment of Rav that the halacha follows all the Mishnayos of this perek? The Gemara answers, E Omar Hilchasa B'Kulei Pirkin. The lo Omar Hilchasa K'Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam, had we had only the comment with which our Gemara opened up, namely that the halacha is like all of this perek, and not had the separate comment of Rav, the halacha follows Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam, hava amino, I would have thought, ad Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam koi, I would have thought that the point of this comment of Rav, that halacha b'kulei pirkin, is a reference specifically to Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam, namely that we shall follow Reb Yossi ben Hamshulam, and not a reference to Reb Shimon Gamliel. And why would we say that? Because, well, Reb Shimon Gamliel finds there's a dissenting opinion to what he says in a Braisa. And you'll ask, well, umay b'kulei pirkin? if the point is to say that we follow Rabbi Yosef ben Amshulam, what's the point in saying in all of the perek? Well, because all of the perek sounds like something broader. So to that we can answer, the Rabbi Yosef Tarti Omar, the concept that, or this point of in all of the perek is a reference to the two comments that Rabbi Yosef ben Amshulam makes. Uplukta de Braisa, plukta he. This is all what I would have thought. Once again, had I had just the comment of Hilchasok Rabbi Yosi, the Hilchasok Bekulei Pirkin, that the halacha follows all of the Mishnais in this perek, when there is no controversy, I would have thought his references to the two comments made by Rabbi Yosi Shulam, and not to that which Rabbi Shimon Liel said, and the reason for that is because that which Rabbi Shimon Liel says, in fact, finds a point of dissent or opinion of controversy or a dissenting opinion in a brisa, and that which is found to differ in a brisa is something to reckon with, is considered a plukta. Therefore, ashme'inen halacha k'Rav Yosi. Therefore, there is a need for a separate comment of Rav to establish that we follow Rabbi Yosi ben Amshulam. Now, that having been, we'll say, we've thereby isolated Rav with regard to Rabbi Yosi ben Amshulam by that comment. La'ashme'inun, this thereby shows us that the other comment of Rav, namely the comment that opened up our Gemara, is that the halacha follows the Mishnayos of this perek, is the Rabon Shimon ben Gamliel koi. That Rav's psak to follow the Mishnayos of this parak is in fact a reference to our Rav Shimon Liel. Uplukta de Braisa la plukta hi, and at the same time showing that the fact that there's a dissenting opinion in a Braisa is of no threat or is of no consequence. After we made so many references to the Braisa that in which you see a differing opinion to that of Rav Shimon Liel, the Gemara asks, my Braisa, so what is that Braisa? Tesanya, it is as follows. And you see, we have a Tanaic source by virtue of the frame that appears around the next few lines. Halokeach behemo meniko mino oivik v'chavim. One who buys a nursing animal from a Gentile. That, by the way, was the topic that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel mentioned or described in our Mishnah. However, here you'll see a differing opinion. Habo achrov, that which comes afterwards, the next birth that this animal experiences, b'chor misofek, must be treated as a possible b'chor. Mipnei shemirachemes afalpi she'eno yoledes. According to this opinion, which is different than that of Rav Shimon Liel, an animal will have compassion on the offspring of someone else's animal. And as we've learned earlier in the Masichta, there's a situation, there are a myriad of animals, a minority of animals start to lactate before they themselves actually give birth. So that you can have an animal that is producing milk and will possibly nurse the offspring of another animal. So this current nursing animal has itself not necessarily experienced a birth, so that the next birth that happens, or the birth that takes place with regard to this animal, has to be treated as a possible firstborn. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Dovar Becheskoso. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel he disagrees and he says Dovar Becheskoso. Now, Dovar Becheskoso certainly conveys the idea that an animal will not nurse the offspring of someone else. So if it's nursing an offspring, it must be its own. The Gemara will relate to this expression with some greater attention later on. V'chein hoyav shumam le'omer. And likewise, and following with this, he says, "Hanichnas l'toich edro b'layla." If a person entered his flock at night, v'ra ke'eser ke'chameshesrei mavkiros v'she'enon mavkiros manikos, and he notices 10, 15 animals, some having born their first child, some having born other offspring prior to this. And he sees this group of animals nursing. L'mochar hishkim u'motza zechorim tluyos b'she'ein mavkiros. And in the morning he gets up early and notices that the male sucklers are suckling from ein mavkiros, meaning animals that had already given birth in the past. Unekevos, and female sucklers tluyos b'mavkiros, they are suckling from those animals that have given birth to only one offspring, and namely these. As such, Reb Shimon Liel says, "Eino choshe shemo b'no shel zu bo lo etzel zu." One does not suspect, or doesn't even suspect, that there have been children from one animal that are suckling by the other animal. And in this particular scenario, since the nikevos are the ones females are the ones that are suckling from first-bearing mothers, there in this particular scenario there are no animals that will be classified as bechor, and hence nothing will go to a kohen. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.